So hello, everybody, and welcome to our special bonus call for the Sweet Spot Solution. We're here to talk about the very important topic of sleep. And because you guys have expressed in a lot of our coaching calls and on the Facebook group that a lot of you have been having sleep issues for a really long time. And we talk a lot about how sleep issues are related to blood sugar. And so hearing all that, I thought, let me reach out to my community of colleagues and see who can I invite in to talk to us about sleep. And Reed volunteered to come in and really share some from his perspectives. So let me tell you a little bit about Reed. Reed Davis is the founder of Functional Diagnostic Nutrition, and he his group trains health professionals in using functional lab testing to get to the heart and the root cause. We are very aligned in that. We're very much into getting to the root cause of health issues. And he also has been in practice as a clinical nutritionist, health coach. I don't know what exactly you call yourself, but for the last 20 or so years, he's amassed lots of education and lots of experience and his perspective. And I love his perspective because we're very much aligned with, let's not just Band-Aid over something. Let's just really get to the root cause. So we're here today to talk to you about sleep. And if there's anything more you want to add to that, Reed, please feel free to share some of your background. And but what we really want to talk about is starting with, you know, you do a lot of diagnostic stuff and you see a lot of things, you know, that people are experiencing in the labs and all. And what is the connection from your perspective between sleep and blood sugar imbalances?
Well, it's incredibly important. And thanks so much for having me on and be able to speak to the audience about this. And sleep, as you know, no one has to tell you or anyone listening. You can hear me okay?
Oh, yeah, just fine.
Okay, good. Thank you. So no one has to explain to this group how important sleep is. You know, it's a pillar of health. You'll never be healthy if you don't get a good night's sleep. Just about every night, you can suffer one bad night here and there. But if you're consistently not getting deep sleep, you won't be healthy. You can't, your body will not regenerate, restore, detoxify. Your hormones will be out of whack. It's just really, really stressful to not be getting a good night's sleep. So the body responds to poor sleep like any other stressor. It's going to raise your cortisol. It's going to throw your blood sugar off. And what's very interesting is how it's such a vicious cycle. You can say poor sleep then causes high blood sugar, but blood sugar problems, high or low, can also cause bad sleep. So it's kind of a vicious cycle, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm imagining that our listeners today are highly interested in sleep, basically for those reasons, and then, of course, blood sugar, because that can really destroy your whole life if your blood sugar is consistently too high. So again, as the amount of sleep decreases, blood sugar increases, escalating any health issue you have. And it's been shown that, you know, increased blood sugar levels raises your risk for diabetes, for metabolic syndrome, you know, and heart disease. You know, so again, less sleep equals higher blood sugar. It escalates any carb metabolism issues you have. We mentioned diabetes and metabolic syndrome as well as heart disease. And here's another interesting thing. Snoring, and people who don't sleep well often are snorers, it's been shown in studies actually doubles the risk for developing metabolic syndrome, diabetes, obesity, and high blood pressure as well. So just think of those few little things. And for those that don't know, metabolic syndrome is if you have 3 out of 5 of central obesity, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, and low HDLs, you're in trouble. You're already overweight, not sleeping well, and those people are never happy, are they?
No. And this group, just for your background, this group is our Sweet Spot Solution program. And that's they came into this program for balancing blood sugar. So we have people in all ends of the spectrum. We have people who are full-blown type 2 diabetics with, you know, starting out with their blood sugars in the 220s and now have them down into normal ranges. We have people who have started out with not with everything looking normal on the conventional labs, but when we had them do postprandial glucose mapping and we had them do A1Cs and insulin, they're clearly what I call pre-insulin resistant. They're not officially in metabolic syndrome, not officially diagnosed as insulin resistance, but they're getting very close. And we've had some really amazing successes. We've also had people who have plateaued, and a lot of people are, the difficulty is sleep. And I think that that's kind of the missing link. So what we wanted to do is get some perspectives on it. You know, I've looked at the mouth breathing, which can cause snoring, and people that tape their mouths, and other specific strategies that you have that you can share with people who are having a difficult time sleeping to really get it.
Yeah, very good. So again, any kind of lack of sleep, restlessness is a form of chronic stress. So just like anyone who's trying to be healthy is trying to reduce stress in their life, whether it's mental, emotional, you have a boss or, you know, spouse, or you know, you're fighting with somebody, getting cut off in traffic, anything along those lines. There's also trauma. And as a chiropractor, Rita, I know you and I both have a background in just helping people who've had accidents, and, you know, pain will keep you from sleeping and things like that. So you got to take care of all the mental, emotional stressors. You got to take care of your traumas and aches and pains and things like that. If you've injured yourself in any way, or if you just have bad posture and are weak, you got to fix it on a good night's sleep. And then of course the chemical and biochemical stressors. We're bombarded with electromagnetic frequencies and with food sensitivities. And a lot of us are walking around with overgrowth of some bacteria or fungus and things like that that we're not aware of. We could have mold in the house. There could be so many reasons, you know, that your body's reacting in a stress response, and it's going to mess with your sleep. And again, sleep is a double whammy because it, lack of that is also another stressor. So you get into this vicious thing. And all of it, raises your cortisol. Any stress raises cortisol. And cortisol's job, in fairness, is to raise blood sugar because your body's under stress. So it thinks, I need more energy. My cells are starving. I've got to be more active. And then your adrenaline is in there and all these other hormones, right? So, the whole idea behind good sleep and good blood pressure to me is to reduce stress in every way you could possibly, address it, because you're gonna, with the high blood sugar, you're gonna decrease insulin sensitivity. Now you're gonna start storing more triglycerides, which is a big factor in metabolic syndrome, the, central obesity and things like that. And again, if you don't watch out, and here we have a great group, they're pre-diabetic. And it is a matter of degrees. So there's, this being a matter of degrees,
can you help carrying the groceries? I'm gonna hit mute all. You'll get muted and then I'll unmute you.
Okay.
Okay, then I'm gonna find you and unmute you. Now that you fell to the bottom of the barrel. You can probably unmute yourself. No, maybe not. Let me see.
So very good. So again, we're just talking about how important it is to control your blood sugar if you're gonna control your sleep, and control your sleep if you're going to control your blood sugar. It's a interesting dichotomy, and it can lead all the way to real diabetes and heart disease. And also, as blood sugar increases, remember, your body's going to try to eliminate it. How? Well, through the kidneys. How? Through urination. That's why people are getting up out of bed. And, again, that raises cortisol even more. So, you know, having a good sleep routine is going to be a major factor. And, we've talked a lot here about high blood pressure. What about low blood pressure? All right, pardon me, blood sugar. It's the same thing. Every cell needs glucose for energy. So when blood sugar drops, which it does during the night because people don't eat right, the cortisol kicks in and raises it. And it's just really is just interesting. And then your adrenals are responsible for cortisol, so now you're stressing them out.
Yeah. So in terms of getting to a a sleep routine. Like if you're talking to somebody who's been having difficulties with sleep for many years, has tried, you know, some of the standard stuff. I tried valerian and I've tried lavender oil and I've tried, you know, phosphatidylserine even, and nothing's helping. How do you, what kind of stuff can you recommend that people do to try to get to the heart of their sleep issues?
Well, I have to say from personal experience, you know, because I'm a energetic young fella, you know, and a driven, I'm probably driven more than some, and you know, I've had in the past trouble sleeping, and it requires a real serious consideration. It's not just wait till you're tired, because you would think that, and you know, like I get up early, I exercise every day, almost every day, I'll say, and I try to eat right and all these things, and yet still I don't get as tired as some folks. At night I can get the second wind very easily. So it requires very conscious effort to try to do things right, set a bedtime, and let some discipline kick in sometimes. We just don't have enough awareness. People will stay up watching a movie and realize it's 1 o'clock in the morning. Well, you know, you just like we do with our kids, you want to set a bedtime for yourself. Yeah. Now, this is just old fashioned, maybe, Rita, but you've heard it. Go to bed at 10, get up at 6. You know, there's this natural circadian rhythm. So these rhythms are incredibly important. Women know it because they have a monthly cycle. It's called a lunar cycle. There's a yearly cycle, and there is a daily cycle called the circadian rhythm. That's why for 20 years, you and I have been running the cortisol morning, noon, afternoon, night, and things like that, because we want. And we see people are roller coastering. Yeah. Cortisol is, you know, low when it should be high. It's high when it should be low. They're literally on these cortisol-driven, adrenal-driven roller coasters. And it can require being very self-aware, self-conscious, if you will, and effort and setting a bedtime. You know, like go to bed. Early to bed, early to rise, right? We all know. Yeah.
And that then done sometimes. But I, you know, here's the thing. You mentioned about the cortisol rhythms. So I've mentioned that to a lot of folks who've said they've had these issues. Let's get your cortisol levels done. And I want to ask you this. What do you think about these people who are waking up in the middle of the night, getting extra vials and testing their cortisol in the middle of the night to see if that's what's causing it? Good.
Bad. Yeah, we'll do it. Mostly it just helps the client with, you know, just awareness. We can predict what's going to be going on. But if someone, you could do it with the cortisol. You could also just check your blood sugar. That's a little less hassle. So if you checked you said you're doing postprandial blood sugar, which is fantastic.
We have a whole mapping that we do. We have them do it and we have them map so they see their peak and then they see how it comes down and then go past that to see if they're becoming reactive hypoglycemia. So most of the people on this call right now probably have their own little charts that they've been keeping and they know what foods are prompting it and what stressors are prompting it and what a bad night of sleep does to it. So we've been mapping it.
And that's a beautiful thing because people who come to the program probably are noticing hunger, weakness, dizziness, nervousness, anxiousness. There's all these symptoms around even vision, headaches, you know, confusion, nightmares are big, sleepwalking stuff. So if you got that, then you likely have a sleep/blood sugar problem. It is huge and it's only going to get worse. And like you said, there's a pre-diabetic. Their triglycerides might be showing up okay right now. They're postprandial and these kinds of things. It's not horrible. But what I would do is, you could do the cortisol. You could even do your melatonin. We check that a lot. But, cortisol will suppress the melatonin. So you're just out of whack. You have a roller coaster circadian rhythm. What I would do is check your blood sugar before bed. And then if you do wake up in the night, you can check it again. And you could also do the saliva samples and check cortisol. But if your blood sugar is, you know, low, that can wake you up. Again, cortisol is going to kick in. And if your blood sugar is high, that can wake you up because your kidneys are going to want to excrete it and you're going to want to get up to pee. So check it before. And if you wake up, it's okay. Go ahead and do a little finger stick, you know, as soon as you wake up, keep it next to the bed and check it again. And if it's elevated or low, then you have something to go on. You've got some objective criteria, which is a foundation of how we work. We like to test and not guess. So then you can start experimenting with the right amounts of protein and complex carbs. And people think, I mean, if you look at the literature, I think it's, it leaves protein off the table too much. They talk about using complex carbs to stabilize your blood sugar. Well, you can for a while, but if you're not a good metabolizer, you know, it could go up, or if it goes up enough and you have good insulin sensitivity, it's going to drive it back down and you're going to wake up. So if you raise your blood sugar too much, let's say I know people eat a bowl of ice cream before bed. This is before they've been working. Why? Because it puts them in a mood. Because sugar can elevate your mood. Oh, okay, now you can go to sleep. But the blood sugar will continue to rise. Yeah. And then insulin's going to kick in, drive it down to where it's too low. You're reactive, you know, hypoglycemic. And then cortisol is going to kick in and wake you up. And it'll raise, it's kicking in to raise your blood sugar because you haven't eaten right. So what I explain to a lot of people is that protein is also really important. And if you're having sleep problems, try that before bed. Because as you know, it will raise your glucagon. Glucagon is the sort of counter-regulatory hormone for insulin. Mm-hmm. It'll slow insulin's effect down. And you can only get glucagon one way, and that's from eating protein. So good quality, you know, maybe high purine type proteins would be good. If you want to do some complex carbs, that's fine. Personally, I don't do grain.
Before bed.
I don't do grain. Go ahead.
Well, we tell them to avoid eating before bed, 3 hours, 3 to 4 hours. Now, if they're having some issues where they're waking up, then we go ahead. Because if you eat within that 3 hour period, you know, your insulin's going up, suppresses growth hormone, can increase cortisol, suppress melatonin. But in the case where I just absolutely need to eat before I go to bed, or I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night, I think the point of, you know, having some almond butter even compared to having an apple. People say, well, I had an apple. Well, that could cause shh, and then right in the middle of the night cause it to go back down. So I'm coming from.
Yeah. I agree with that, you know, that it doesn't have to be right before bed and you got to watch. But for some people, especially if they're very fast oxidizers, like they just really need a lot of meat and fat just for energy, like they just happen to be that type or sort of metabolic type, then they need that to stabilize blood sugar as well. And they'll burn that for energy and some of the fat, and you can get a better night's sleep. So people will have to experiment it. You know, no two people are alike anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to experiment and see what works for you. I would say, you know, I start off with what I think is one of the critical things, which is the regular bedtime, and then checking your diet, try to really establish solid blood sugar levels, test it before. And this is what's interesting. Some people have normal blood sugar when they go to bed, but they'll wake up, and when they do wake up at 3 to 4 in the morning, and that could be hormonal, as you mentioned, the growth hormones and things, and your body's detoxifying. You might just wake up. Check it then, and you could find it either high or low, and then adjust the diet accordingly. If it's you know, too high, you could be eating too many carbs. If it's too low, you could be eating too many carbs. Again, the insulin, it's going too high and insulin's driving it down. So you really, that's why I found protein. And 3 hours might be good for some people. It might need to be a little closer to bedtime for others. You got to play around with it. Yeah. The other thing is real obvious about sleep hygiene. You got your bed, making sure it's big and comfortable. There's nothing worse than getting out of bed after a bad night's sleep with a backache or something, you know. Exactly. And so And they say that cool and well-ventilated rooms are good. Like, I sleep with my window open, and have since the time I was a kid. You know, I grew up in Canada, and we'd literally just get extra blanket because we'd be freezing. But fresh air, we're just taught fresh air is more important than,
absolutely,
you know, and yeah. So, you know, obviously noise should be eliminated. I'm not a freak about electromagnetic frequencies, but I do, you know, kind of intermittently leave my cell phone downstairs. So it's not always right next to me on the bed, and I don't have a TV or anything like that in the room. And dark. So free from noise and electromagnetic frequencies. Dark is better. And I have, those shades you put over your eyes. If, you know, someone else is around and they got lights on or something like that, it's really important to make it dark. And the other thing that's very obvious is, exercise. You know, let me ask you, Rita, haven't you found that people exercise earlier in the day sleep better? Have you found that?
Absolutely, and that's one of the principles we teach is, and especially to get outdoors and exercise, not necessarily go to the gym, but because that the sunlight stimulates the pineal to say, oh, melatonin down, which then allows it to come up at the right point. But, you know, so many people are in artificial light all day, and we wake up and we don't get the signal that says, you know, get the circadian rhythm right. So I tell them to get out in the sunlight, but before noon and work out in the morning. Some people can't, but I definitely find that that's better. It's better for me as well.
Yeah. You got to find a time. I think when it is daylight, I mean, if you could exercise outside in daylight, just think of the ancestral implications of that, you know, like, you know, mankind, if you will, is hunter gatherer by you know, physiology. And, what was done in the day, we're not nocturnal. We're diurnal, the opposite. So, you know, again, early to bed, early to rise, get out there, start your hunting and gathering early on, which usually would, you know, and then these sorts of things. And you mentioned the melatonin and the pineal gland.
Yeah.
But another tip I've learned over the years, and you know this, Rita, is good gut health and digestion.
Yeah.
So the more we talk about this, the more we just get into holistic lifestyle medicine. It's holistic lifestyle medicine. I use a five lettered acronym, DRESS. Diet, you're made of food. You know, everything goes in matters, and especially with regard to blood sugar, the right amount of protein and the right amount of fat. And everyone could be a little differently, you know, but you can figure it out. Diet, R is rest, DRESS, R is rest, meaning sleep. But you can rest during the day too. You know, you can get some winks in if you need to. Diet, rest. E is obviously exercise. You can't be healthy if you don't exercise. Your body won't detoxify. You lose muscle tone. You get achy and you get old before your time. So diet, rest, exercise. The two S's are stress reduction, which is the biggest area because everything's stressful today. The world is not what it was during those ancestral times. As a matter of fact, I'm doing a conference, the Ancestral Health Symposium coming up, and our talk is, would that ancestral person survive in today's environment? If we plucked a person 500 generations ago, let's look at your own history, your own family. 500 generations ago was a long time ago.
Yeah.
There was no cell phones and TVs and nothing. It barely was agriculture, if any. It was all hunter-gatherer. What if you pluck that person and put them in today's world? You know, assuming they speak English and all that stuff, you know, and they wear a suit and tie or whatever. Would they live even?
Yeah.
You know, I would say, yeah, but they'd need a lot of work, a lot of education,
right.
a lot of lifestyle medicine. So, kind of getting back to the DRESS, stress reduction is huge because, you know, the chemicals and we talked about trauma. I think chiropractic and acupuncture are really important to keep your body in shape. Getting rid of foods you're sensitive to, getting rid of any overgrowth of bacteria, you know, parasites, funguses, viruses, and things. And the last S in the DRESS acronym is supplements. You mentioned a few that could help you sleep. But, you know, I'm not really huge on that. I do use melatonin occasionally, just not enough to feel hungover, which is my benchmark for if I took too much. Sure, you're going to sleep through the night, but how do you feel? Can you pop out of bed at 6 a.m.
Right.
or whatever you do at 6 a.m.? You know, that's good for you. So otherwise, I think it's food, you know, the exercise, the reducing stress and these things that will lead to good night's sleep and proper blood sugar.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned melatonin and that you sometimes prescribe or do melatonin yourself. Do you have any tricks for helping people to naturally elevate their melatonin in the evening so that they can fall asleep?
That's a huge one, because melatonin is mostly made in the gut, you know, so it's the gut, from my research, has 400 times the amount of melatonin in it than any other tissue or area. So we talk about the pineal gland, which, yes, it's signaled, you know, by the hypothalamus to, you know, release some melatonin when it gets dark out. But that's just a little bit extra. Your melatonin is a phenomenal antioxidant and has other benefits neurologically. So your body's very rich in melatonin basically all the time. If you measured it throughout the day, you'd be surprised that it doesn't go up that much at night. But just enough to make you a little drowsy so that you can fall asleep. And hopefully, if your blood sugar's under control, stay asleep.
Yes,
because if you've studied sleep at all, and again, DRESS, I've studied diet, rest, exercise, stress, and supplement. Well, that rest, it doesn't need to be 7-8 hours of crappy sleep. It needs to be 4 or 5 hours of deep sleep. The non-REM sleep. So we know from sleep studies that even if you get 3 or 4 hours of really deep sleep, that, you know, that where you're just out cold, there's no dreaming going on, you're not moving, you're laying like a rock, your brain cells actually shrink a little bit, enough to let some cerebral spinal fluid flow through the brain. And it gets picked up in the lymph system. It's called the glymphatics. That's a phrase that was coined just a couple years ago. You could go to Joe Mercola and look up glymphatics, like glial cells, but and then lymphatics, kind of, you know, put that word together. You get glymphatics. It's very interesting study on deep sleep and the brain cells shrinking and cerebral spinal fluid flowing through. So you clean out the amyloid plaques and the things that would give you like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or something later on. You know, it's really, really important. And of course, you know from Chinese medicine that those are the times when your liver's really doing a good job. Liver time, they call it. You know, before that, it's gallbladder time and so on and so on if you look at the Chinese medicine clock. But we find that that it works, you know, and you and I have been around the block a few times. You know, we know some things that work.
Yeah.
A few little tricks of the trade. So my one trick on melatonin and good sleep is just to make sure that your digestive and detoxification systems are working really well too. It's a holistic lifestyle medicine for any problem, no matter what it is. If it's fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue or sinuses and allergies or moodiness and irritability, digestion, all that, it's to go after that one thing is, you can target, you can kind of have your, you know, outcomes that you want, better sleep, but it requires an entire philosophy and way of living and way of thinking even.
Right.
And I know we think a lot alike on that.
Oh, absolutely. And I know we're not thinking, I always say the this for that. One of my students says the pill for an ill, you know, that's the Western medical model. But a lot of folks move into, oh, I don't like medicine, I'm going to go into this holistic. What supplement do I take for this? Or what herb do I take for that? And it's still the same allopathic attitude. We need to look at it as a holistic, a whole being, not the pill for an ill or a this for that approach.
Yeah, I get asked all the time, hey, Reed, you know, you're in the health business. What can I take for this or take
exactly.
for that?
I get that all the time. Yeah.
I tell some of those guys, well, I recommend you take your wife out to dinner. That's what you can take, you know, take a walk around the block or,
Yeah.
I always say, what can you take? Take your wife out to dinner. You'll feel much better.
Exactly. It's looking at it as a whole thing. And I really appreciate that. What do you think of these devices like the Fitbit and the Oura Ring and various things to measure the sleep? Do you think they have a benefit? Do you think that, I know it's an awareness.
Yeah, I believe in objective criteria. You know, I started my entire sort of health journey and career in a chiropractic office where we took objective measurements. What's your range of motion, strength and flexibility, and even x-rays and trigger point, you know, mapping out trigger points in someone's neck. And so objective criteria became my way of doing business. And I like measuring the hormones and things, blood sugar and stuff like that. But, you know, once you get the data, it's how you live and what you do. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Well, I just got myself one of these rings, this Oura Ring, and it's telling me about my sleep. And I will say, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but what I will say is that it's inspiring me to pay more attention to sleep, because my problem is not like you, I have all this energy and I just keep going and I don't have a regular bedtime. And sometimes I get 2 or 3 hours of sleep. Sometimes I get 8 or 9 hours of sleep and it's very variable. So, but the cool part about this was what I realized in looking at this is I fall asleep within 2 to 3 minutes and I have a lot of deep sleep. So even if I don't have a long stretch of time, most of the time, most of it's deep. It's like super deep. So my time, you know, the timing for me, I have healthy sleep, even though I don't get enough. And I'm not using it as an excuse, but it's helping me to say, okay, last night you only got whatever, 5 hours and 53 minutes. Let's go get to bed earlier and let's get it, you know, to happen better. So for me, it's good. It gives me some objective stuff. I was wondering for somebody who has difficulty sleeping, if it would be providing some information or insights as to what's happening. It'd be great if it was measuring blood sugar and cortisol at the same time, but maybe in the future we'll have that kind of thing that's just a little patch on device that tells us our cortisol or everything, you know, the Star Trek device.
I'm going to get one of those Oura Rings. I think I want to see if my sleep is as deep as I think it is. I think I sleep hard. You know, because I'm like you, my head hits the pillow and I pretty much fall asleep.
Yep.
And I go to bed about 10 o'clock and, you know, I know I'm sound asleep by 11. I think, because I get up early, sometimes I get up at 4 o'clock, but I think it's after getting, you know, 4 hours, 5, you know, of really deep sleep. Because I never remember my dreams. I don't dream much that I know of. And why is it? Well, because you're not really having long periods of REM sleep. You're having you want long periods of deep, non-REM sleep, you know. And there's three different levels.
Yeah.
Yes. So I want to get one just for that. Really cool. I haven't got it yet, but I'm getting one.
It's really cool to look at. Like last night, I only got 5 hours and 39 minutes, and it was my deep was 1 hour and 26 of that, which is 25%, which is what they consider to be really good, right? Anything over 15 is average, but up to 25%. The other day I had like 50% deep sleep, which was really cool.
I think that might be, you know, you may not notice on a one day or a one time basis, but you might look for other little clues. And after all, we are all health detectives, you know, of, hey, I notice when I get 4 hours of that really deep sleep, I exercise harder. My appetite is stable. Yeah. My blood sugar is more stable. Yeah. You just have clearer thinking, no fogginess and this stuff. Whereas and I bet you, another thing you'd notice is that it changes with, what you did the night before, like your diet or alcohol, you know, alcohol and recreational drugs and stuff like that have to have, I would say, a deleterious effect, you know.
We are, I think I've asked you everything I wanted to. Do you have anything more you want to say? I want to open it up for questions if anybody has any.
Yeah, if anyone has a question, I'd love to be put on the spot.
Yeah, we both like to do that.
It's called Let's Play Stump the Nutritionist.
So who has questions? What I recommend you do, I can look back in the chat, but what I'd rather you do is just open up your mic, open up your video so we can see you and ask your questions, because I know there's a bunch of you on here who have had. One of the things I've been sharing with people is something that a colleague of mine, Jim Otis, he's a chiropractor in Northern California. I don't know if you know him, but he created something called Brain Time. And it's some sounds that you listen to. And we had him come in and speak to our practitioner group a while back. And within a couple of days, some of the people downloaded his sounds. You know, you put the ears in and it has particular sounds he's been studying for years. And it helps to create a rhythm. And he's, you know, said it helps with sleep. And we had two people like said, okay, I'm going to try this. And within a couple of days, they had their first good night of sleep after many years. So we have it. I don't know if we've put it in yet, but we're going to put it in the site, but it's called Brain Time. And if you go to drritamarie.com/braintime, you can read about it. And I think he's offering us a discount of some sort to try it. Like, just try it.
Yeah. That's great, Rita. I 100% think that, aside from the EMFs that you might get from your cell phone next to you, you know, just get a real long ear cord. You can get extensions for your earplugs.
That's right.
And you need to use earplugs with that. Listening to it like on a radio speaker wouldn't do it. You have to put in the earplugs. It's called binaural listening. So the brain has a right and a left hemisphere. I think this is my right and this is my left. So they don't really talk to each other real well in some people. You know, you have an organ in the middle that helps connect. And through binaural training, you can get them to talk to one another. In other words, just with music and with sounds and things. So I found this program. I'll just tell you, it's called Synctuition, like synchronized and intuition put together, Synctuition. And I'm on like level 2, lesson 20 or 15 or something. And I really think it's having an effect. I listen before bed. Sometimes I listen in the morning if I didn't. But I do that 25 minutes a day. And it really has, I'm starting, you know, I've talked to other people. I think they've had more benefit than me. You know, maybe I'm okay. I don't know. But I think it's having a very positive effect. I see Lynn has her picture up. Lynn,
go for it.
You got to turn your mic on.
Yep. Whoops, no, your mic's off now.
Okay, you got it now? All right. So I'm actually asking a question for somebody that doesn't have a microphone. It's Linda Lou. She says that she would like to know how long during the day would be acceptable to sleep. She's read that it's not good to sleep during the day, i.e. in taking a nap.
So, I'll go ahead and jump in. So that's a great question. You certainly wouldn't want to oversleep so that you're restless at night. Yeah. But the body, Mary, and I call it the DRESS, and I call it rest instead of sleep because it's really important to rest your body. And sometimes I become more sensitive, I think, to when I need to rest. So if it's, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and remember, I start at 4 a lot of mornings or 5, even though I told you to sleep from 10 to 6. You know, I just get up early because I'm ready to go. And I can tell when I need a rest. So if I have a challenge coming up, let's say I have a 4 o'clock podcast or interview, or like today at 3 o'clock, I'm doing a webinar. I may just rest. I might find it at 2 o'clock and I'm going to do a 10 minute or 25 up to about 25, less than half an hour. So I keep my rest periods, under half an hour, but I can go completely out. You know, I'll put on my little, I meditate and things like that. I listen to a guy. It sounds funny. His name is Sadhguru, Sadhguru. I don't know if you know Sad Guru. He's not sad. It's S-A-D-H, Guru. Oh. Listen to that guy talk about sleep. He only sleeps 3 hours a night, but he talks a lot about resting versus sleeping. And I think I follow that, those tenets because it works for me. So I can, you know, even though I got up at four o'clock in the afternoon, I could still be ready to roll, sharp, clear, ready to answer tough questions or whatever it might be.
Great. Super. Anybody else? Open up your lines. Don't be shy. I know you've had a lot of issues, some of you, so go for it. Here we have Janet. Hi.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Rita Marie and Reed. Dr. Rita Marie, would it be appropriate to bring up that conversation that Dr. Michelle Gamble and you and I had about the fat cells and insulin connection, about the number? Would you capsulize that? Because I remember a little, but I probably couldn't say it.
Well, you could remember the question. I have conversations. It was something about
the number of fat cells and the age that you have them and when you stop getting them and the influence of insulin on the fat cells when you get older.
Yeah, so I've
roll that out.
Question that it was you kept when you gained weight up until the age of maturity, whatever that might be, 18, 21, whatever, varies from male to female, and then you increase the numbers of fat cells. And after that, you were stuck with that number of fat cells because when you lost, so you gained and you lost weight in the first 18 years of life, you're adding fat cells, deleting them, adding fat cells, deleting them. And whatever you ended up with at age 18 or 21, whatever that age range is, you are stuck with them for the rest of your life. And if you are overweight at that time, those fat cells are going to drive you to fill them whenever you try to lose weight. But that the issue was that Michelle brought up, I don't remember exactly when you asked that question, was that insulin has an effect on them? I don't remember the exact question.
Well, that's what she
was. I think, yeah, I completely agree. It's a fact that you're going to end up with a certain number of fat cells by adulthood. And you're stuck with them unless you have them removed.
Liposuction.
And there is liposuction. Now there's this fat freezing. And so what they're doing now is they're taking people who are quite overweight, but not super obese either. But, you know, you see you got 25 pounds of fat that you just don't need because the fat cells have gotten big because you haven't really lived as well as you might. And so you can freeze them. And they actually more or less die and can be resorbed by the body. So there's fat freezing now, and there's also always been liposuction and other forms of surgery and things. Now, you don't want to resort to that if you don't have to. But I've had people, you know, get on a good lifestyle program, lifestyle medicine. They're following the dress program. They've lost a lot of weight. They're feeling so much better, more energy, better sleep and clear thinking and so on and so on. And living a good life, but they got this little bit left over that just will not go away. And it's because you're kind of stuck with it. You got a certain number of fat cells. So I've actually told people, hey, there's no shame in going and having a doctor who's an expert in that area to touch you up a little bit. You know, a little touch up here and there is not a bad thing. It sounds very vain. But, you know, we're vain to some extent, and some of it's okay. So that sort of thing. The other thing I'll say is that you might be talking about the connection between the hormones leptin and ghrelin. You know, these are the satisfactions, and they would have an effect upon eating, which has an effect upon insulin and blood sugar and things like that. So people with fat, too many fat cells, too big, too enlarged, have poor appetite control, and they have no portion control. So they're hungry. And not only that, they don't know when they're full, so they overeat, you know, and things. So that's definitely going to affect blood sugar and insulin levels. And that might be the connection you're referring to. But, that's a great question, Janet. And, you know, we're all just in this together, working on it, learning, trying to help each other out. I love seeing the interaction with the group, you know, and so if anyone else has a question, that'd be great.
Sure. I'm looking to see. I don't see any others in there, but it goes by so fast. I have a hard time seeing.
Yeah.
It. Just open up your line. So yeah, we have about 10 more minutes before we have to close. So
okay, I'll open up my line and say hi. I'm not on my video laptop though.
Okay. Hi, Diana.
Hi. Yeah, I want to go back to that nap thing just a little bit more. I got the cortisol issues at night, which Dr. Rita Marie is very well aware of, and we are working on that. But I really resist trying to take that nap during the day when I'm really crashing, because I know that when I wake up in the middle of the night, I won't be able to fall back to sleep if I take it. But there's days where I'm just so down that I have to take that nap. But what will happen is I'm having trouble falling asleep. I hit bed about 9:30 at the latest, and I'm asleep very quickly. But I get up several times during the night to go to the bathroom. And it's a challenge to get back to sleep. And usually if I can get back to sleep at the 1:31, the 3:31, it's like almost no hope I'm going to go back to sleep. But we have found it is cortisol. My glucose is, because I do postprandial, I know that, I don't know, I've never done it at night when I wake up, but I do it before I go to bed. So I know that it's okay. But lately it's been rising in the morning. It's been a little higher than normal. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Is there some other secret that we might be missing here? That,
for example, working on your gut
stuff or something to that effect? Anyway, that's kind of my question.
It's a good question. And the nap you take during the day, one thing I heard you say, let me back up and say that it might not be related to your sleep. You could have sleep problems when you don't take naps. Is kind of what I'm getting, that you're not a great sleeper whether you take a nap or not. And so they could be, you know, not very much related actually. But what bothered me a little bit was you said, I'm so done in, I have to take a nap. And that's, I think, an issue. So you have this energy production problem perhaps. Maybe it has something to do with blood sugar levels during the day as well. So, because what I said about I don't mind taking a 20-minute total rest out, like at 2, 3 in the afternoon, if I have something to do that I want to be a little more prepared for. So, but I'm not done in. I could go on and press on and do the interview or podcast or webinar or go swim in the pool or you know, whatever it is, go shopping or something. I take those naps, those little breaks, because I want to. You know, it's like, you know what, I think I'm going to do now. So I've learned to just give my body a little rest. Remember, D-R-E-S, you know, I'm going to rest for a few minutes instead of just being driven. You know, I'm a kind of a go-getter, go-giver kind of guy. So I've learned to be a little more sensitive. So not sure the two are related.
Okay. Diana? Is there anything else that could pop up in there? Because my cortisol crash is really low in the afternoons. Actually, I've got more cortisol at night than I do during the day, which is all part of the equation. I'm still trying to figure out how to straighten all that out. So,
yeah, I get it. And good on you. Fantastic for doing the work and for working with Dr. Rita and getting the data and forming habits, you know, that work for you. So far as sleeping at night, the first thing I ask people is, why do you think you're not falling asleep? Is it your mind racing? Is it your legs are restless? Is it, there's light in the room, somebody's bothering you? Why do you think you're not falling asleep?
Well, I was just calculating. She sounds like she's falling asleep. And you're sleeping, you said 1:30, so you're sleeping for about 4.5 hours before you wake up.
Oh, I thought I
had no trouble falling asleep. It's the getting back to sleep after the 1:30.
About 4.5 hours, and then she wakes up.
Then it's every 90 minutes or so after that the rest of the night, and it just, I can't get back to sleep.
And have you done a waking cortisol? Have you checked your cortisol when you wake up?
Yep.
Is it high?
Not during the day, only in the morning when I first wake up.
Yeah.
After that, it just goes.
When you wake up at 1:30 in the morning, have you checked it then?
Yeah, with the Dutch test, we did. Yeah, that's when I'm high.
That's when she's high, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that. you know, saliva might actually be, you could just do a single saliva when you wake up. It's actually a little more bioavailable level. It's a little more real time. I like the dried urine test very much. It's good for a lot of things. And yet the sensitivity of saliva might be a little more accurate, or I'll say real time. They're both accurate, but one's right. just one's accurate over a longer period of time. So go ahead.
We might try that one again.
Where we can get, like, as opposed to the full panel, just say we just want to see part of it, or you add that?
Spot check. Yeah, it costs about $30 to spot check. Saliva, you know, it's nothing. So then if it's elevated, that's why you're waking up. The question is, well, why is your cortisol rising? And it could be something mental, emotional. And I know people whose minds race, and just after they've had a little sleep, you know, like you said, you sleep pretty good. Your head hits the pillow and you sleep and you're just waking up. And if it's high cortisol, it could easily be blood sugar. It's a bounce. I don't know if you do alcohol with dinner or something like that, but that's something we don't do any of that. Yeah. Any new client of mine has to quit drinking for 90 days.
Well, we quit years ago, so that's not an issue. This is great. I really appreciate all the stuff you're telling us, because this is going to help with some things we might try. In the meantime, while we wait for the next Dutch test, which is probably going to be about 6 months out. So the faster I can solve this, I think the faster my healing is going to progress.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I would definitely go for some spot saliva tests, and we'll get with that.
What I was also getting at was the idea of a racing brain and how you can do breathing, and you can listen to tapes, and, you know, like YouTube has about a million get better sleep videos on it. I mean, there's no shortage of fall asleep meditation, guided meditation, things like that. And they're actually very helpful. You know, it's not weird. It just walks you through breathing. And, man, I got one that the guy doesn't even start at 10. He starts at 5, you know, like there's 10, 9, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, and by 1, this guy starts at 5, and by, I never hear 1, I'm asleep, you know, but like, he goes 5,
and just. So that might be something to try also, as you know, you're in ERC this year, and Jim Otis gave everybody in ERC a free month of brain time, so you can try that out and see if that works. You can try out some of these those tapes. And have them, you know, by your bedside that you can just play in the middle of the night if you're trying to fall back to sleep.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's all that. What do you think of mouth taping? Because you mentioned snoring.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know that sometimes I snore occasionally, and it's all from open mouth. You know, if you close your mouth, you can't snore. They make these rubber band things that keep your mouth shut, and you won't snore as long as you have good nose breathing. I guess that's okay. You know, snoring. Yeah, I've seen it. As a matter of fact, I might have it in a drawer somewhere. I just never want it. Won't stick to my mustache. You know, it just it won't stick, so I can't use it. But yeah. I've tried different things. You know, we're all working on it. Losing weight is good.
Yeah, and Diana's already lost a whole lot of weight and gotten her blood sugar. Can I tell him your story about your retinopathy?
Absolutely, absolutely.
She went to her eye doctor for her, you know, whatever annual thing, and he says, you better get your diabetes under control. She goes, I don't have diabetes. And he said, your eyes are telling me you have diabetes. And she goes, well, my doctor didn't tell me I have diabetes. And long story short, she signed her husband up for our sweet spot program so that he could get his diabetes under control. And she starts doing it with him and testing her postprandials. And sure enough, she's got a blood sugar issue. And she worked the program. And a year later, went back to the eye doctor. And he said, oh, good thing you got your diabetes under control. Completely gone. So that's the kind of stuff that can happen when you let your blood sugar go out of control. And you're not really aware that you have a blood sugar issue. So she's one of the like, oh, yeah, a good story to tell people to, you know, scare them into. making sure you get your blood sugar and everything under control, because it's a holistic process, like you said. So we are out of time, and I am so appreciative of you being here and sharing with our group. And everybody, I'll open up everybody's line so we can, on the count of three, say thank you to Reed. And this will
thank
be
recorded,
and this will be put in our membership site. So on the count of three, one, two, three.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Great. Appreciate it. All right. Yeah, well, all right. I'll see you next week or two.
I can't even remember. Soon. Okay. Love you, Lirita Marie. Thank you.
Love you too. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.